Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. 1 year ago, news of a car bomb in Kabul or an assassination attempt on a Pashtun leader would barely have made the news. More of the same, typical Afghan Mujahideen infighting and chaos. Last week, it was headline news. In the months after September 11th, the world has turned its attention to the rocky, dun-colored land, the rousting of the Taliban, the hunt for Al-Qaeda, the mountains of Tora Bora became that place where American boots first hit the sand in search of terrorists. And a year into that search, Afghanistan is a land transformed. Women are no longer compelled to cover themselves with the burqa. They are allowed to work, to attend school. Kabul's soccer stadium is used not for ritual execution, but for soccer. People have reason to hope for a life with more freedom. Connection listeners, the U.S. military considers Afghanistan a victory. Do you? And what lessons does Afghanistan hold in America's hopes for a regime change in Iraq? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK to join us. My guests this hour are three correspondents who know this country well. Lise Doucette is a senior BBC reporter currently in Kabul. Ahmed Rashid is a correspondent for both the Wall Street Journal and the Far Eastern Economic Review, and the author most recently of Jihad, the Rise of Militant Islam in Central Asia. And Dexter Filkins is joining us. He's a New York Times correspondent, formerly based in South Asia himself. Lise Doucette, I'm going to start with you because you were with Karzai in Kandahar when he was attacked last week, and then you were reporting on the aftermath of the car bombs in Kabul, where you are right now. Can you tell me how the people living there are viewing these events?
Well, it's deeply troubling for many people in Afghanistan. One, that they had a president who so freely was moving around among the crowds in places like Kandahar and in effect putting himself at risk, because they understand that part of the stability of Afghanistan and the stability of what is still a very fragile interim government depends on Hamid Karzai. He's a symbol of hope for this country, and also very, very unsettling for the people of Kabul that there should be a car bomb that will rock the center of the city. And many people who saw this miraculous transformation of their country after the tragedy of September the 11th began to fear that it would be back to the kind of violence that they have lived with for 23 years. I have to say that the Afghans are an incredibly resilient people. They pick up and they keep going. But the problem is they've been going for so long, they wonder when this violence and this way of life will come to an end.
You were based in Kabul some years back, Lise, and I'm interested in your reference to Karzai as such a key symbol. If he were to be assassinated, if he weren't there, what would change?
Well, I think Karzai himself, well, as he did the day after the assassination attempt, made it clear that it's very sad that people equate the stability and the longevity of his government, indeed the country, with one person. He talked about making a broader-based, more representative government. He talked about moving this country toward a democracy. But anyone who's been to Afghanistan knows it's going to be a very, very long process. We're still in a situation where the power is measured in the provinces by who has the most guns, who is the most powerful warlord. It's a series of fiefdoms across the country. But that is the nature of Afghanistan now. You have a president who has strongly supported by the international community, who has an American close protection unit. Afghans are a people who are deeply sensitive of foreign interference, but I think they understand that what is needed most of all right now is a strong symbol of a true international commitment, both economically, politically, and militarily.
And is the sense on the street that the assassination attempt and the car bombing were from those disgruntled fiefdoms, or perhaps from a return of Al-Qaeda forces?
Well, that night in Kandahar, I spoke to the president after the assassination attempt and after they examined the evidence and the identity of the attacker. Hamid Karzai said there was a clear Taliban link. The person had come from an area which had been a Taliban stronghold. The governor said that people from that area had been responsible for attacks on American patrols. But I've just come from an interview with General McNeil, who's head of the American Special Forces here. He says that he's not still 100% convinced that there was a Taliban and Al-Qaeda link, although he is ready to say, of course, that the battle against Al-Qaeda and Taliban still hasn't been won.
Now, Lise, I watched that video that your cameraman shot in Kandahar, so you take care of yourself. That's getting a little close.
Thank you, Dick Gordon. Good to talk to you again.
Lise Doucette in Kabul. Dexter Filkins, it was your story this morning in the New York Times talking about the Al-Qaeda forces regrouping in Afghanistan. Your sense of what we know at this point, whether or not it's actually the sort of force that could threaten that government, or whether or not Afghanistan is simply being used as a staging ground for whatever attacks might be staged outside the country?
Well, I mean, first, these are the best estimates of American intelligence. And so, you know, intelligence is more of an art than a science. So I think the best evidence of whether or not Al-Qaeda is trying to move back into Afghanistan, if you just back up a moment, of course, it was their base. They were thrown out. They kind of scattered. Many of them went across South Asia and around the Middle East. There was a sense that many of them tried to come back together in Pakistan. Things have been kind of hot for them there. The sense is that they're trying to move back in. Afghanistan's an extraordinarily remote place. It's kind of difficult to convey how remote parts of it are if you haven't been there. So the sense is that they're coming back in. I think time will only tell how whether or not they're effective and whether they can actually do that and elude the American soldiers who are trying to hunt them down at the same time. I think the best evidence for it is going to be things like the events of last week, like a car bombing in Kabul or an assassination attempt. And whether these were linked or not, it's not clear. But if you start seeing more of those things, then I think that could be evidence that they're going to try to take a shot at the United States using the Afghan government as a means to do that.
Ahmed Rashid, you have spent time in many of the Central Asian republics. One of your books actually focuses, the book Jihad focuses on the rise of militant Islam in Central Asia. When we look 1 year later at Afghanistan, should we be concentrating on Al-Qaeda? Should we be looking elsewhere as opposition forces change and morph and regroup the way they have over the last 25 years?
Well, certainly, I think the one of the major problems has been over the last few months, and why we're seeing this deterioration in the security and stability in Afghanistan, has simply first been, I think, the unwillingness of the international community to live up to its pledges. We haven't seen the kind of reconstruction money and the commitment to expand peacekeeping troops to other cities beyond Kabul. There has been a change now in U.S. policy over the last few days, but the U.S. really has to play a leadership role here. It can't have a halfway house. It's now demanding that perhaps the Europeans can do more of the peacekeeping and more of the providing funding for reconstruction. But that's not going to be good enough, because I think the U.S. with its military presence there has to play a leadership role in the country and to get other countries, other Western states to mobilize. I think the other major failure of perhaps the Americans in particular in this last 12 months of this war against terrorism has been the fact that, whether we like it or not, the all the neighbors of Afghanistan, that is the five Central Asian republics, Pakistan, have all witnessed enormous political upheavals. And the problem is that all these countries are ruled by very dictatorial, authoritarian leaders. And part of the game plan, surely in the last few months since the war has wound down in Afghanistan, should have been a more comprehensive strategy to push these leaders towards carrying out economic and political reform, which could have staved off the growing instability that we're seeing today in Pakistan, in Kyrgyzstan, in Uzbekistan, and other countries in Central Asia. What has been lacking has been the fact that many of these regimes have used the presence of U.S. troops on their soil to legitimize themselves and to almost give themselves an excuse not to do anything more, not to carry out without reforms. What is needed now, I think, is a push by the U.S. and the Western alliance to insist that stability in these countries depend on political and economic reform.
But let me turn to Dexter Filkins if I can, because just in the last couple of days there were reports from within the U.S. military that perhaps it was time to pull back to reduce the number of people in Afghanistan. When you're talking to those intelligence sources, the people who will be giving the advice that allows the politicians and the generals to make the decisions, is there really that sense of being torn, whether or not the United States needs to stay, take a bigger role, spend more money, be more of a nation builder, or move on?
Well, you know, that's been a conflict and a debate inside the Bush administration since the campaign, I mean, since before the election. Any number of Bush himself and his aides said, we don't do nation building, we're not into that. And suddenly they find themselves nation building. And so there's a sense that I think on one hand that in the administration that they don't want to get bogged down, but there's another, and I think the people that know the country, and there's quite a number of people in the administration who do, and they know it well enough to know that unless there's a very firm and sustained commitment from the United States, then a place like Afghanistan is going to fall apart again. And so I think you're seeing this play out. You know, just I think 2 weeks ago, 10 days ago, the administration signaled that it would support an expansion of the international peacekeeping force, which is now there and only in Kabul. And now the details of that are unclear. Would it be sent to other cities? Would it be larger? How much larger? What would they do? And that sort of thing. But it does seem like there's a recognition on the part of the Bush administration that this is going to be a big job and it's going to take a long time.
And Ahmed Rashid, when you talk to people in the region about the circumstances that the decisions that the United States faces, how much do people introduce Iraq into the conversation, as in Afghanistan is a practice range for Iraq, or you know, the example of Afghanistan has encouraged the United States to be more eager to go into Iraq? Is that always a part of the conversation?
People here, thinking people here in Pakistan, Afghanistan, are extremely worried about the Americans going into Iraq, simply because there's a very strong feeling that attention will be totally diverted from Afghanistan. And the kind of commitments that the international community has made for reconstruction and troops and other things will be diverted to Iraq. There's enormous concern. And, of course, in other countries, I mean, especially in Pakistan, there's enormous concern that there will be perhaps another resurgence of violence and protests against the Americans by the Islamic fundamentalist parties. This is a very precarious time right now in Pakistan. On October 10th, there are going to be general elections, and the military is trying to change the constitution and give itself a more permanent role. It's a very tense time, and if the Iraq now surge in anti-Americanism across the region.
Well, Connection listeners, it's the history is not for America's relations with Afghanistan. When the Russians pulled out at the collapse of the Soviet Union, so did the American involvement in that region, and it precipitated much of the violence and the arrival of the Taliban through the 1990s. And people there are thinking about that as well. As the U.S. military says and looks to the Afghanistan war as a victory, as an example of what should lie as a model for military activity in the years ahead, do you share that same sense of it as something that should be considered a success? Is the story over? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. With me on the program today, Ahmed Rashid, correspondent for, among many other newspapers and journals, The Wall Street Journal, The Far Eastern Economic Review, Far East Economic Review, and Dexter Filkins, correspondent for The New York Times, former Central Asia Bureau chief. Spent a lot of time covering the war in Afghanistan. In fact, both did. And we're talking about Afghanistan in context of 1 year later. Dexter, you're in Washington today. In fact, I realize that you're going to have to skip out at some point. perhaps before the end of the program in order to make it to a Pentagon briefing. But tell me, based on what you're hearing, whether or not there's any unanimity between the Pentagon and the executive in terms of whether or not Afghanistan can be considered a victory, or at least a victory so far.
Well, I certainly think so. I think that there would be unanimity on that. I mean, if you back up just, well, back up a year, I mean, I remember going into Kabul after the Taliban had retreated, and there were safe houses that you could just walk into that hadn't been searched yet by the U.S. military, and there were maps, there were documents. It was clear that attacks were being planned there. You know, there were camps, there were training camps. 20,000 people went through these training camps. This was a sanctuary for some pretty grim and determined people, and who were willing to do more than the attacks on September 11th. Those people have been the sanctuaries have been crushed, and those people have been dispersed. They're on the run. Instead of living in the better parts of Kabul, they're dashing from cave to cave, and I don't think the danger has passed, but it's been diminished quite a bit. And I think maybe that's not a victory, but it's been quite a success, I think, in those terms so far. The big question that remains, I think, obviously, is for the country itself, and whether that part of the question will also be answered.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. First to Somerville, Massachusetts, and John's on the line. Hi, John.
Hi. Yeah, I just want to say that I think this whole war in Afghanistan has just been one miserable failure. I mean, look, the objectives that were set out at the beginning have not been achieved 1 year later. What were they? We were supposed to destroy al-Qaeda. We were supposed to return Afghanistan to a civilized country and get rid of bin Laden. We haven't done any of those. And there's ample evidence for each one of the propositions that I just made. And I think the reason why has to do with our leadership. I mean, the people in charge today don't even have the slightest clue about geopolitical strategy and how to leverage your geopolitical power. The United States, for instance, could have, in the very beginning, when we knew that al-Qaeda was going into Pakistan, we should have gone to Mr. Musharraf and said, look, we're going to do something for you. We're going to put pressure on India and try to get them to have some kind of plebiscite in Kashmir. With that, we could have covered Mr. Musharraf, and then he would have been able to tell his people, look, we're going to get this. We've been looking for this for 50 years. In order to do this, we have to let the Americans in here and get this over with.
John, just stay on the line for me with you for a minute. I want to get Ahmed to speak about that kind of trade-off that you're talking about. I'm not convinced myself it would work, but I'm going to defer to Ahmed Rashid.
Well, I think, you know, there has been attempts made by the U.S. To try and defuse the situation between India and Pakistan. They have not been all that successful because, you know,
Ahmed, are you there? I think we've lost our connection there.
Well, can I please say a word to that?
Go ahead, John.
Well, they haven't been that successful because we can't offer them anything. Mr. Bush is not able to think in those terms. Just like one of your speakers said in the beginning, he was in the election campaign. He made it clear to everybody, I'm not into nation building. I mean, with people like that, what are we to expect? This is,
okay, we're reconnected to Ahmed here. Ahmed, can I just bring your insight here to John's contention that, in fact, it's not a success, it's a failure?
No, I don't think it's been a failure. I think the target was to dislodge the Taliban and to destroy the al-Qaeda as a military force. I think that has been successful. Now, I think there have been a lot of repercussions in this war, in the neighboring countries, in Afghanistan itself, and there you have seen failings by the U.S. and the other members of the international alliance. And I think the precarious situation in Afghanistan and in Kabul right now is partly due to that. But certainly the initial aim of this war effort has been successful. I think where we are seeing failings now is in the follow-up. And the fear is, of course, that if Iraq happens, then the follow-up is going to suffer very badly.
Dexter Filkins, is the follow-up, as John's suggesting, tied to the fact that Bush is in many ways caught between saying in a campaign that he never wanted to be in the business of nation building and finding himself doing almost precisely that right now?
Well, I think they've had to throw that one out. I mean, I think they realized that they've got to look. I mean, Afghanistan was a disaster, and September 11th was a disaster that was 23 years in the making. I mean, you have this country which is utterly destroyed. All of its institutions are destroyed. There's no roads. There's no schools. And if you leave that alone and you ignore it as much as you'd like to, the kind of problems you get are the kind of problems that came about on September 11th. I mean, it became a haven for a bunch of really bad people. And I think they realized that. I mean, I think the problem, as Ahmed Rashid mentioned, was I mean, right now the problem is that all these countries got together several months ago, the United States, Japan, a bunch of others, and pledged billions of dollars in aid to rebuild the roads and just to get the country moving again. And some of that money has come, but most of it hasn't. And it's kind of a chicken and egg thing. You know, the donors don't want to give the money because they don't see the government that can spend it. And you know, so it's all... And the Afghans say, well, we can't, you know, we can't give you a government until you give us some help. And so it's kind of a mess right now. But I think, you know, if there is a determined effort, and I think that there will be, I don't think even with Iraq, I don't think the U.S. government is going to walk away from this.
So, Ahmed Rashid, just take us back to a point that Lise was making about the importance of Karzai. Does he need to demonstrate that he's got that control, so as Dexter's saying, the money will actually start to flow? Because that's a problem. People are saying, you know, we don't have anything for our village, we don't have anything for our town. It's all Kabul.
Well, not only for that, but I think it's essential that money and foreign support flows, so that the central government and Karzai himself can have something to show to his people. The whole issue really revolves around how fast can you get the central government to extend the writ of its authority outside Kabul, rein in the power of the warlords, and bring the country under central government control. Now, this can't be done by Karzai alone. He has to have money, he has to have support to enable him to do this. And I think the problem has been that has been lacking. So what we've seen really in the last 9 months since the defeat of the Taliban has been, unfortunately, the central government has not been able to extend the writ of its authority through reconstruction, through aid, through helping people, through winning people away from the warlords. And that's been the fault of the international community, not the fault of Karzai. Karzai has, you know, many problems and perhaps many failings also. But I think the whole point about this effort in Afghanistan was that it was a partnership.
Trouble with
community.
That. We're having trouble with your line. Ahmed, I'm just going to get the engineer to chat with you briefly while I move to another call. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. John, thanks a lot for your call. To Boston now, Imran's on the line. Hi, Imran.
Hi. You know, I just wanted to say that taking a long view, I think that when you look back at the U.S. conduct over the years, both from a Cold War policy and in the region, Pakistan and India and Central Asia, and then the support of dictators in the Middle East, I feel like it all was conduct that contributed to 9/11. And now, with the current failings in Afghanistan and our new support for Central Asian dictators, and also like to tie in the fact that today's Globe report on the Pentagon's I guess dream of regime change in the region, I feel like, you know, we're setting ourselves up to repeat 9/11 again. It might not be, you know, this year, but it might be 5 years, 10 years down the road. And I really worry about this, and I feel like nobody really sees, you know, the larger picture here.
You talked about the failings in Afghanistan, and as did John before you, and I mean it's true. Mm-hmm. No one knows where Bin Laden is, and Mullah Omar and other top Taliban leaders, and the aid's been too slow, and there's perhaps too many foreign soldiers, and nobody really knows how to set things up. But I mean, you need to acknowledge what Dexter was saying about, you know, toppling the Taliban, providing some kind of sense of future, and that really, is it realistic to expect a country that was as broken as Afghanistan to be, you know, put back together? I'm a little bit caught on this success or failure bit.
Well, I would say I agree with you. I mean, I think that it's probably too soon to say we were successful or not successful. But I think that, you know, as we start to look at gearing up for war with Iraq, the administration is saying, you know what, we're going to have to start pulling resources away from Afghanistan, and we're going to have to start devoting them to Iraq. And so there's a thinning out of resources and a further deprivation of Afghanistan, which I think is going to leave another vacuum in the region. And, you know, there's this kind of story of the used tissue paper in Pakistan that, you know, America comes in when it needs to, and then like a Kleenex, once it blows its nose, it throws it away. And every time something goes wrong in the region, they come back and they pick up the same tissue paper again. And I just see the same pattern, almost verbatim, from the 1980s and 1990 playbook happening again.
Dexter, is this part of the conversation in Washington that 1989 ought not to be repeated and Iraq can't be used as an excuse to abandon Afghanistan? Or how do you see it?
Well, I think, I mean, if I may, I think Imran is touching on a larger issue, which is you have a string of regimes in the Middle East. I mean, all the way from Pakistan to Egypt that weren't elected democratically, and, you know, for one reason or another, often the reason is oil. It's the United States has been a force largely to defend the status quo, and I think, if I may, I think the point he was getting at was that by supporting that status quo, and even maybe trying to nudge it along here and there, that larger problems get overlooked. And so I think we're going to see this, you know, this question come up again as the Iraq issue looms.
But are you saying that it, Dexter, that in your view it is a lack of that overall strategy, that there's people who are providing advice for the administration on Iraq and other people who are providing advice for the administration on Afghanistan, and they're not necessarily talking to each other, talking about the bigger picture?
No, well, I think there's a pretty coherent strategy in the Bush administration on these things. But, I mean, getting back to Afghanistan in 1989, I mean, I guess, you know, by now the story is pretty familiar, but The United States supported the rebels to get the Soviets out, and when they got them out, the United States pretty much walked away from it, and they walked away from a country that had disintegrated, and Al-Qaeda and the Taliban rushed into that vacuum. And so I guess if you had a chance to rewind the clock, then you'd say, well, you know, maybe if the United States had stayed more engaged, then these terrible problems wouldn't have come about.
Okay, Imran, thanks a lot for your call. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Roger's on the line. Roger.
Hello.
Hi.
I think that we need to really examine whether success in terms of what this administration and previous ones have been shooting for really has been democracy and stability. It seems with the way we've been shifting, you know, from supporting one dictatorship to another.
Well, it never really has anything to do with the interests of those particular countries. It has to do with American interests, largely, doesn't
it? I think that instead of taking an international, being an international partner in promoting the kind of economic development that would lead to stability, real stability and democracy, it's almost been a case of supporting, shifting allegiances, exporting a lot of arms, militarizing the area to justify the exertion of dominant U.S. force to support really narrow interests.
This is a point of view that I've heard expressed by a lot of people in the region. I mean, I wonder if Roger's not saying, in effect, that people in Pakistan and perhaps even Afghanistan have a more clear-headed notion of what U.S. policy looks like abroad.
Well, certainly. I mean, you know, everyone is following policy very, very closely, I think, as to, you know, what they're doing. I think, you know, the real problem we're facing is that over the last 9 months, what you've seen in policy has basically been a standstill in the sense that there has been a military campaign continuing against Al-Qaeda, but there has been very little change in the commitment of the Americans and the international community to changing the landscape inside the country, the political and economic landscape inside the country. And this standstill is now getting very, very dangerous. It's not helping Karzai. It's perhaps beginning to unravel the authority of the central government, what little authority it has. It's encouraging the warlords to become stronger. What we need is to break the stalemate. What the U.S. needs now to do is to not just say that we want foreign troops, more foreign troops in a...
Is that it, Dexter? That the U.S. needs to stop looking at perhaps its own particular interest? We're short here. I'll just ask for a quick answer.
Well, I mean, you know, the history of nations is about the history of nations looking after their own self-interest. So there's not going to be some new dawn where the whole world changes. But I think what Ahmed is getting at is maybe a better balance between sort of an immediate self-interest,
right,
which is, you know, going after the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, and maybe a kind of longer-term view if you're talking about America, of America's self-interest, that a stronger and a stable country in the middle of Central Asia is in America's interest.
Dexter, thanks for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Dexter Filkins, correspondent with the New York Times, reporting from Afghanistan. And we'll continue our program after the break with Ahmed Rashid on the line from Lahore, Pakistan. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
From Boston University, this is
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. In this week, we're taking aspects of the news of the past year, all triggered from the events of September 11th, and looking back at the year. This hour, we're talking about Afghanistan, whether or not the lessons learned there, military, political, with U.S. involvement, is a story that's finished, whether or not it's being regarded more as a practice ground for Iraq. Your thoughts on that? We're going to go first to Charleston, South Carolina. Scott's on the line. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Dick. Thanks for having me on.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to weigh in. I'm a member of the military, and I've been to Afghanistan several times, and we'll be going back shortly. My contention is that militarily, it's been a success for us. There was a caller you had on from Somerville, Massachusetts, who felt that everything was a total failure. And I guess I take issue with that because I think it's very difficult to take what you see on CNN or Fox or any other news program while you're sitting at home and make a judgment on it if you really haven't been there, you know, firsthand to see what's been going on.
What are we missing, Scott? What's the part of the story that's not being told?
Well, I just feel that... The media doesn't have a real firsthand look at military operations over there. Whatever they see is going to be somewhat filtered through whatever their military escorts let them see. So the reason that I feel that it's been a success militarily has been that we really haven't had much trouble obtaining our air superiority or any other dominance over there. And in conversations that I've had with other branches of the military, guys from the Army and the Marine Corps, and in talking with them about their missions, you know, they're not having a whole lot of trouble over there. And
I wonder if in part the success that you're talking about isn't that the U.S. military behaved in a different way in Afghanistan, using that balance of sharp, fleet-footed people on the ground, air power, kind of a new way of fighting, and people aren't looking at that saying, you know what, that worked.
Well, you know, again, I understand where the guy from Somerville is coming from, and that, you know, there's not a whole lot of information coming out of Afghanistan anymore. Of course, in the days following September 11th, it was hot and heavy all the time, and it has, as time has gone on, you know, our attention has been shifted to other issues around the world, particularly, you know, the economy here at home, and now the latest thing being Iraq. But I guess I just wanted to say that militarily, I do think it's been a success. In terms of the other issues, politically and diplomatically, I think it's going to be a real long road for us. And not that I agree with everything that the president has done, but I will say the guy was up front from the beginning that it was going to be a long road and that Americans were going to have to be patient. And if you look at how the United States has had to deal with other tyrants besides bin Laden, you know, if you look at Hitler and Mussolini, it was a long road. You know, World War II was not won very quickly. And here in this situation, we're not even a year into this thing. And I think people's patience is wearing thin. And I just think that it's going to be a long road.
No, I get the fickle part, Scott. That's something that I was thinking of earlier when we were talking about, you know, how much people expect to see accomplished in such a short period of time. I want to ask Rina Amiri to join us here. Rina's a UN political officer. She's based in Kabul. She's speaking to us from there right now. Rina's had a chance to listen into what Scott was saying. Rina, can you tell us whether or not the people in Afghanistan share any of what Scott's saying, that there are successes there which perhaps should be highlighted, even though, you know, there's no bin Laden, no Omar, and aid is short and all that stuff that we've talked about earlier?
At this stage, up until the Lloyd Jitka, I can certainly say that the presence of the international community was very much welcome, and there was a high level of optimism in the country. Lately, especially with the recent spat of bombings in Kabul, the level of confidence has been shaken up. There's much more concern about the bin Laden factor as well as the remnants of the Taliban and Hikmatyar, the former Mujahideen leader who ended up becoming a source of real instability in Afghanistan. And now I think that the situation has shifted to some extent. There is a high level of anxiety about the situation as it currently stands.
But anxiety based on the fact that people don't believe that the foreigners will stay there to assist with it, or I'm not sure when you say there's reservation.
There's anxiety on a number of different levels. The fear of the international community becoming disinterested in Afghanistan is certainly something that is on people's minds. People do hearken back to the period in the 1990s when the international community seemed to have to step in and give some level of confidence that they would stay engaged, and soon after left when the situation became unstable. Again, the country is facing another phase of instability right now. And there is some concern of what may be called a self-fulfilling prophecy, in that often in the media, Afghanistan is depicted as a country that has a culture of warfare, which is deeply embedded in society. And there's a concern that once again, as violence starts again, that instead of viewing the situation as involving a number of factors that come into play in every post-conflict situation, that the international community might step away from Afghanistan again.
Let me turn to Ahmed Rashid in Lahore, because when you talk about the unease based on the instability, I mean, I'm a little bit lost as to where we turn for that model of stability. We certainly don't see it in Pakistan. There are more car bombs and more assassination attempts in Pakistan over the past months than we've even seen in Afghanistan.
Yes, certainly. I mean, let me say, I mean, I agree with Scott. I mean, I think, you know, there has been a military success, certainly. But I think the game now is political and economic. And this is going to take time. It's not going to be easy. But what people are seeing, I think, in Afghanistan is a falling off of this political and economic commitment and a coherent strategy which demonstrates that international commitment to Afghanistan.
There goes that line in Lahore. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Scott, thanks for your call. We're going to Malacca in Medford, Massachusetts. Did I pronounce your name right?
Yes, almost. Hi. Going back to what was being discussed earlier, whether or not the U.S. military campaign in Afghanistan has been successful or not, I think primarily depends on what we assume to be the aims and objectives of that campaign. If it were to gain access to Central Asian oil and the gas pipelines in Afghanistan, I think the campaign has been, you know, fairly successful. However, if it was, and they needed to sort of dislodge the Taliban in order to gain that access.
Well, what do you think, though, Malika? Do you think that it was about oil? Do you think that had the U.S. military gone in and been able to pluck out Mullah Mohammed Omar and Osama bin Laden, that that it might have ended there? Do you think there was a grander scheme?
I believe so. I think I should also state that I am from Pakistan. I'm from that region. I was there during the time that the military campaign began. And I think most people in Pakistan would agree with that. You know, there were ulterior motives. It wasn't all that, noble. I mean, the U.S. campaign wasn't completely noble in terms of just, you know, emancipating the women of Afghanistan and, you know, eradicating a cruel regime or whatever. It was U.S. interest that took the U.S. there to begin with. And, yes, I mean, they have not been able to, you know, find Osama bin Laden, but was that the primary goal of the U.S.? That, I think, is something that needs to be debated as well.
And you'd made a reference to oil as well.
Yes.
Which would have predated September 11th if that was one of their concerns.
Absolutely, yes.
And?
And, I mean, there was. I mean, I think we all know that there were U.S. companies and Brazilian companies vying for the gas pipelines in Afghanistan and the Central Asian region, and the U.S. companies were failing in those negotiations. And, you know, I think that one of the reasons would be to regain access to that oil. And I think Karzai is the perfect person who would be in U.S. interest to be there, who would be, you know, the fact that he's ruling Afghanistan right now is in, again, U.S. interest. And they will do anything they can. And nation building, they will also be involved in nation building only to the extent that which would ensure U.S. presence in the region.
Ahmed Rashid, is oil in that region a fortunate bonus of the U.S. presence, or was it a motivating factor?
It's a bonus. The U.S. oil companies are heavily involved in Central Asia, and they were certainly negotiating with Taliban in the mid-1990s to have a pipeline through Afghanistan. But I don't think it was a motivating factor for initiating this war. I think the motivating factor...
And you know what I'm going to do, Ahmed? I'm going to send you a little envelope of rupees, and you can give them to the man who's supposed to care for your telephone in Lahore. It's tough to keep you with us when the line keeps cutting out. So I'm not sure if you can hear me, Ahmed. I'll take this moment to say thanks for being on the program today. Ahmed Rashid, author of Jihad, The Rise of Militant Islam in Central Asia. And I can tell you from my own work with him over there, one of the most respected correspondents in the region. To Rina Amiri now with the UN in Kabul. When people there are looking for a gesture that U.S. involvement is more than military, more than al-Qaeda... Is it just about the money? Is it just about the American responsibility to be the leader in that word that Bush doesn't like to pronounce, nation building? Is that it, Rina?
I believe that at this point, up to this stage, it was perceived as more than money. There was a recognition that the presence of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan and the terrorist camps had a very destabilizing factor. It was a destabilizing factor not only in Afghanistan, but posed a threat to the international community and the United States on September 11th. I think there was a recognition that the United States and the international community understood it and chose to engage in Afghanistan for that interest in getting rid of the terrorist camps. I don't believe that at this point the pipeline issue is as much of a source of concern that that's the only reason that the United States is engaged. There is a perception that the United States chose to engage in Afghanistan because of the Al-Qaeda threat.
Rina, I'm going to guess from your accent and command of the language that you've spent some time in the United States yourself.
I did. I actually, my family left during one of the periods of instability in Afghanistan, and I was in the United States. I only returned 7 months ago following the Bonn Agreement. I was actually at Harvard at the Kennedy School working with the Women in Public Policy program, and I chose to come here to work on the peace-building and reconstruction efforts.
So as you can see both countries, and you know that this is the week here in the United States where people are taking that really sober second look at the implications of September 11th. Are people in Afghanistan also looking at this week as something of a time or a moment to reflect?
Certainly. This period is particularly poignant in a number of different ways. One of them is Ahmad Shah Massoud was killed on September 9th, and his death was just commemorated yesterday. There is people are looking at this period and looking back and seeing where we are today, looking back not only in terms of the situation of where the conflict is, but where reconstruction efforts are. And at this stage, people are assessing how much progress has been made on both levels, where the country is in terms of level of stability, level of security, as well as how much the international community has invested in Afghanistan on the reconstruction efforts.
Looking back, Rina, with some sense of satisfaction, some sense of hope?
This is probably not the period where people are most optimistic, given the recent spat of bombings, particularly in Kabul, the assassination attempt on President Karzai's life, which was only a couple of days ago, has really shaken up the country. And the level of optimism that there was about the peace process is, I would say, at a real low level at this stage. And there is a concern that the situation is deteriorating.
Rina, I have to let you go, and I want to thank you for being with us. Rina Amiri, UN Political Affairs Officer in Kabul. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.
This is W.